of the call this meeting order of the Senior Center Advisory Council Housing and Transportation Subcommittee. And if who was leading our pledge? I saw a name there. Oh, yeah, Jerry. Thank you, Jerry. Would you mind leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Yeah, let's stand up. I pledge
allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jerry.
No problem.
Please be seated.
Not to interrupt, Gene, I just got in. So do you want me to?
Oh, great, Sandy. You know why? Because I'm battling a 7-day head cold.
Oh, yeah.
And I sound very nasally, so.
No problem.
Just stay with the group from listening to me.
Today, but I got it.
All righty. Thank you.
Everybody, for your patience. I apologize. We'll do the roll call. Linda Barcelona, please.
Got it. Okay. Charlene Ashendorf.
Present.
I'm present. Denise Barnes.
Present.
Elizabeth Busick.
She's going to be absent today.
Okay. Helen Cameron.
Present.
Amelia Castro. I thought I saw her name. No? No. Okay. Jerry Chang.
Present.
Jean Hernandez is present.
I am here.
Juno Kim.
Present.
Carol Moore. She's there. She's muted.
Okay.
Okay. Mary Perdue.
Present.
Okay. And Sandy Stang.
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Action items. AB 361, review and make findings required by government code subsection 54953E3. Recommendation, continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of the emergency arising from COVID-19. Meeting in person presents imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees, and the emergency continues to directly impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person. I need a motion and a second.
Move approval.
Second.
Helen was first, and who was second?
Charlene.
Charlene, thank you. Okay, so then we need to go around and call everyone's name, and it'll be yes or no to meeting online.
Charlene Ashendorf was the seconded the motion. Linda Barcelona?
No.
Denise Barnes?
Yes.
Elizabeth Busick is absent. Helen Cameron motioned. Amelia Castro, absent. Jerry Chang?
Yes.
Jean Hernandez?
Yes.
Juno Kim?
Yeah.
Carol Moore? Carol Moore?
Hi, are you having trouble hearing me?
I am, I hear you now.
Yeah.
Mary Perdue?
Yes.
Sandy Stank.
Yes.
Sandy Stank.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I hear you now.
Okay. Thank you.
That is a majority.
Okay. Thank you very much. Number five, the senior non-emergency medical transportation report. Vera has a community services update for us, I believe.
Hello, everyone. Yes, I do. So I should actually have a couple months worth of reports just because we didn't convene last month. So I'm going to start off with our March reports and then I'll move on to the one from April. So for March, we had for Area 1, a total of 2,529 trips provided. Area 2, 2,800. Area 3, 3,610. The average cost per trip for these SNEMT trips were $52.51 for Area 1, $45.43 for Area 2, $41.76 for Area 3. Average trip length was 6.2 miles for Area 1, 8.39 miles for Area 2, 4.94 miles for Area 3. And then average cost per mile was $8.47 for Area 1, $5.42 for Area 2, $8.46 for Area 3. And that concludes the report from the month of March. And then for April, similar numbers, we have Area 1, 2,333 trips provided. Area 2, 2,651 trips provided. Area 3 is 3,335 trips. Average cost per trip is $50.67 for Area 1. Area 2, it's $41.99. Area 3, $42.60. Average trip length was average trip length was 5.9 miles, and then Area 2, 8.7, and Area 3, we have 5 miles. And average cost per mile was $8.48 for Area 1. Area 2, we have $4.83 and $8.46 for Area 3. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions for Farah?
I do.
Yes.
Farah, great report. And I really appreciate, first time seeing this really, and I really appreciate down at the bottom where you have the service areas lined out and
yes.
And by district, by city. I did notice that some of the city's districts have changed. For example, in the last one, Service Area 3, Costa Mesa is now District 5. I don't know any of the others, but I just wanted to point that out in case you didn't know.
Yeah, you know, we did have some change in districts, but the way our service area works, they're just cut out really by geography because of the way our providers are spread out. So Abrazar does North and Central County, and then we have Agewell that takes care of South County. So that's pretty much how SNEMT works, but I do realize that they have been redistricted. So I'm going to have a look at it. And as long as it still falls under Area 3, then we could most likely go back and change that district to reflect the appropriate district. Thank you, Mary. I appreciate that, though.
Any other questions? Oh, Helen has her hand up.
Oh. Yeah.
Hey, Helen.
Farah, thank you again for your report. Besides all the numbers, it would be helpful if you see any changes in usage patterns? Are these continuing to be pretty much standard monthly? I think with the last 2 months, there's very little change, but have we seen a change over the last year, or are we seeing impacts of as people start to get out and go to appointments versus pre-COVID? Can you give us some background on that?
So I'm not going to have a lot of historical background for the reason that I just started managing this program not too long ago, but just from, I used to do data previous to this assignment. So just looking at SNEMT data, there was a little bit of a slowdown when the pandemic first started. And then every time we do see surges, there's a reluctance to use the program. So we do see that. As of now, it's been a little consistent. Our providers have addressed certain needs when it comes to the actual provision of the service, just because of the rising cost and gas prices. So we are kind of looking to help help with that right now by possibly increasing rates. We don't know just as yet, but ridership kind of remains consistent. The only time we really see a dip is when there is a lot of rising cases in COVID. But it hasn't been as drastic as when COVID first started, just because our SNEMT providers have been very diligent and using a lot of safety measures. So they require masks. There are a lot of sanitation protocols that take place. There's not too many ride shares that occur. So that has actually made the program a little bit more consistent with ridership.
Do we hear from the providers that they are being asked to deliver services to a more expanded customer base, like for shopping and that sort of thing? Or is it strictly pretty much the same as it's always been for medical appointments?
For the scope of this program, unfortunately, we're restricted in what we can actually do in that, in the sense that since the program has been designated as a senior non-emergency medical transportation program, it can only service that scope of work just because of the, you know, the nature of the contract and what the county has agreed upon with our providers and also OCTA and M2 being our funders. That's pretty much the purpose of the contract. So for that reason, we're unable to expand those parameters right now, but I know that in the recent past, we've extended the ridership to vaccination appointments. So that was something that wasn't done in the past, but now we do that. Besides this program, OOA does have other programs with our senior nutrition program that does offer transportation rides to our senior centers for congregate diner, dining places and things of that nature, but that would not be included in the senior non-emergency medical transportation. And I cannot see that program going in that direction just because of the contractual limitations.
And that may be relevant, this question may be relevant to Director Beck's presentation later, but has there been a conversation about offering visits to behavioral health providers and other different kinds of medical services that we know are needed by our senior population?
You know, I don't know exactly the nature of these appointments when they make them, obviously, just for, you know, privacy reasons, and we don't get into the exact cause for the visit to the doctor. But I mean, it's definitely open to someone who may need to go see a therapist, or, you know, because those do come under that umbrella. So, I'm not sure if our providers collect that information where they can kind of tell us, okay, this person, I know that they have certain level of collection, especially for people who are receiving ongoing treatments such as chemo, because this program limits ridership to 16 rides per month. So people who do experience these ongoing health concerns and have to actually see doctors on a regular basis are actually provided waivers that will be that so they can actually ride for more than those 16 trips. So I know that they do collect some level of data when it comes to appointments. I am not sure if they do have a reason for every appointment, but I'm sure they have some level of data on that. I could follow up to see if we have a need for mental health appointments.
Thank you. That would be really helpful because we know that healthcare agency does have a transportation program as well, but sometimes we have data from different sources. It would be helpful to get some kind of insight into the usage and the need. Thank you, Farah.
That's sure, of great. Course. Yep, no problem.
That's a really good question, Helen. I'd never thought of that. So they must be collecting some kind of data when they put these people on the non-emergency, like they must be asking something about the appointment, right?
Yeah, so there might be some level of data with the nature of the appointment, but obviously, you know, HIPAA laws and all of those come right into play when it comes to actual sharing of the data. So I'm going to have to look into it and see what is actually being used and to see at what level, at what, like, you know, maybe a broader level of sharing may be possible with the group. I will look into that and get back with you guys.
Okay, thank you. Very good. Yep. Any other questions for Farah? Right, thank you. Very good report. Appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Okay. And then number six is our presentation, and Helen Cameron coordinated the point in time count with, is it Doug Bett? Is that how you pronounce it? Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'll let you introduce.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have Doug here this morning to present on the point in time count. And he will tell you more, I'm sure, about what that really means in terms of data collection for the county. But we're very happy to have Doug in Orange County. He's been here for a couple of years, I think, almost now. Maybe he doesn't admit to two, but we're getting close. And he's been part of the healthcare agency programs, working on homelessness. But his background is really, I think, particularly appropriate for Orange County. And we're very happy to have him here. Prior to coming to Orange County, he was with the Corporation for Supportive Housing, which are a significant national group who provide lots of resources for counties and organizations who are attempting to develop housing solutions, particularly around people who are really vulnerable living without housing on our streets. And also, he was very hands-on in New York, and I'd love you to share a little bit more about that, Doug, when you start presenting, because he was in very hands-on in a program in New York in dealing with folks who were unhoused on the streets. And I'm very happy to welcome you here today to present, and you will be able to share your screen. I imagine you have a few slides for us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Helen. And thank you, everyone, for giving me a few minutes today to talk about the point in time count. So, yeah, my role at the county is the director of the Office of Care Coordination. We recently moved into the county executive office about a week and a half ago from the healthcare agency. So for the last couple of years, we were located in the healthcare agency. And now we're specifically in the CEO's office. And the reason for that is that our office, when I joined the office about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, my background, as Helen mentioned, is deeply rooted. I'm a social worker. It's deeply rooted in working with individuals experiencing street homelessness. So most people, I believe, and who know about the Office of Care Coordination, when they hear it, they think homelessness. And really with the Office of Care Coordination, the main charter of our office is to work within the county and with outside of the large, the county with the capital C, to make sure that we're coordinating our efforts around areas like homelessness, individuals that are justice involved, sort of those groups that touch so many of our systems, and how do we coordinate better as a county, both within our county, and then with our city partners, our provider partners, our local businesses. So that's what the Office of Care Coordination is. in terms of the point in time count, the Office of Care Coordination is the administrative, and I'll try not to get too techy here, but the administrative entity for Orange County's continuum of care. So we are the staff to the Orange County's continuum of care. And essentially a continuum of care is a required local body and required by the federal government in order to help set local priorities for the federal funding that comes down from traditionally housing and urban development, HUD, to the local jurisdictions. And it just so happens here in Orange County that our continuum of care covers the entire county. For example, in LA County, there's a couple of continuums of care. There's LA, there's Long Beach, there's Pasadena, I think there's Glendale. So, there they have to sort of work together, where here we're sort of fortunate we have one large continuum of care. And then the other piece that I think is important to mention is that the administrative entity who I said we were in, that's not always required to be the county. In some places, it's a city. In some places, it's a nonprofit. Down in San Diego, the Regional Task Force for the Homeless, which is a great nonprofit, they're the administrative entity for their COC. And why this is really important when it comes to the point in time count is that the federal government requires that every jurisdiction receiving federal funding conducts a point in time count at least once every 2 years. And here in Orange County, we traditionally have conducted that point in time count once every 2 years, where a lot of jurisdictions do it annually. That point in time count, it not only is a census for individuals and households living unsheltered, but it also captures the amount of individuals and households that are experiencing homelessness in our shelter system as well. So sometimes you hear the big number and you think, okay, that must be the number of folks on the street. But it is and it isn't. It's, you know, part of it is, and part of it is account of the people living in our shelter system at the moment. So we conduct, the federal government requires each jurisdiction to conduct their point in time count within the last 10 days of January. We conducted, so this year, like everything in life, you know, COVID has thrown the ultimate curveball into everything. We were scheduled to do a point in time count in 2021. Us and almost every jurisdiction in the country got an exception from HUD to forego that point in time count due to COVID concerns. We had scheduled to do one in 2022 during those last 10 days in January. The Omicron surge hit, we got an exemption to push it back the last 10 days of February. So we, you know, so we conducted our point in time count during the last 10 days in February. Before I get into the results, I just want to spend a second on the methodology, because I think a big piece of this is, okay, you give me a number, but how'd you get it? And is it any bit valid? And I know, and I'm excited to take questions and, you know, so any question is a fair question. But I want to sort of set the stage here. So why we're excited about the results that we got this year is because back in 2019, we changed our methodology. Prior to 2019, the methodology was mostly an extrapolation-based methodology. So it was, in 2019, we made a significant change in our methodology to be a survey-based methodology, meaning we were going to go out and we were going to canvass the entire county. We were going to survey everyone willing to be surveyed, and we were going to come up with a true number compared to doing a smaller section of a geographic area and then extrapolating out that to, you know, and coming up with an estimated number. So our 2019 results were really difficult, and I'd argue impossible to compare to previous years because of such a significant methodology change. So we were excited for, okay, round two is going to allow us to have two sets of numbers that we can compare. And we got that delay, and we're here now with our second set. And a few things to point out about our methodology that I think will help people feel a little bit more comfortable in the results and understand what we do. So we used practically the same methodology in 2019 compared to 2022. Very minor tweaks. And if people are interested, I'm more than happy to provide those tweaks. But essentially what we did for the unsheltered count was we conducted it over the course of 3 days. I think it was the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, in that last week of February. And each day we did a different, what we call service planning area, but a different region. So the north, central, and south, we divide up the county that way. And each of those days, we focused on a different region. And on each day, we would have volunteers and professional staff meet at two deployment centers in whatever SPA, service planning area we were doing that day. And then we would deploy them out to canvas that entire geographic area. They received training, you know, prior to it. They had surveys that were conducted for the most part through a phone-based app that also captured the GPS coordinates of where that survey was conducted. Part of the survey was, although it was anonymous, there was some unique identifying information that we did capture from each survey goer so that, you know, if we were doing the survey and we were canvassing the entire area in the morning and the entire area at night, it's fair to think we might capture the same person twice. This unique identifying information allowed us to ensure, even if, you know, when we asked, hey, were you surveyed before, even if they were and they said no, and we went along with that survey, that when we looked at the data afterwards, we can see that this unique identifying information was a match and it was most likely a duplicative count. And then what we also did, because we got the geographic data immediately, and our project management team that we funded to project lead this was CityNet, who does a lot of outreach throughout the county and is well-versed in where to expect folks. If we felt like an area came back under-surveyed or had a lot less results, CityNet was able to go back out there and re-canvas the area to make sure that, you know, a popular spot might have been an anomaly for that particular time when the surveys went through. Let's go back there to make sure we're capturing that information. So we did that over the course of 3 days, even though we had all those hiccups that I emphasized with pushing the event further back. We were able to get enough surveyors to ensure that we covered the whole geographic area, the whole county, just over the same course of time and the same amount of times as we did back in 2019. So we feel really comfortable about the data I'm about to present to you. I'm gonna share my screen and I'm gonna go through a few slides, and if people have questions, feel free to ask. And I'll try to be quick because I feel like always leaving time to provide questions is usually more useful than me just going on and on and on. So here are the high level stats right here. Our overall number is, as you can see here, 5,718 individuals. This consists of people living in shelters and people experiencing homelessness out on the street. This includes individuals and this includes families. This is the big number, you counting everyone. That number represents a 16.6 reduction from 2019. The numbers here on the right here with North, Central, and South, those are the overall numbers in those three geographic areas. And what we feel good about is that we saw double-digit decreases in each one of those, what we call spas. I'm sorry, I'm so ingrained in calling them spas. They're spas in those geographic areas. You know, in the North, that 2419 represents a 12.5% reduction. The Central number represents an 18.6% reduction. And in the South, we saw a 23.3% reduction. So what that told us was, or what we believe it tells us, is that there's some consistency in the overall reduction, that we're seeing that geographically throughout the county, not just in one or two very specific areas. Then we, as we've done in previous years, we wanted to show the results and we wanted to emphasize three important subpopulations. I know one of them's particularly important to this group. And it's interesting, and I'm glad I'm talking and presenting with you, and I'm interested in your questions because your subgroup is the interesting one here. So for the subpopulations, we saw a decrease in veterans by 10% and by transition age youth in 13%. And overall, we collect a whole bunch of data for this. And for the most part, all of our numbers are encouraging, AKA they're going down. But there's a few that aren't. And those few that aren't are really what tells us where we need to go and what we need to think of. And one of them is the senior number here. The 718 seniors that were counted represent a 6% increase from 2019. Let me see, let me make sure I get the slide. So you're gonna see there's an interesting trend as we break it down for seniors as we go through this data. And here you see, now we break it down, we like to break it down between unsheltered, which I'm showing you here, and then our shelter numbers. So our unsheltered numbers, yet again, that 3,057, that represents a 22.8% decrease of individuals experiencing homelessness on the street. And that's a good thing. We're excited about that. And we see that same decrease throughout the same, through these three geographic areas, the three spots. 30% in the North in that purple area, 16.7 in the Central, and then 21.6 in the South. Back to my my three subpopulations here on the right. Veterans on the street, a 32% decrease. We saw a decrease overall with that. The transitioned age youth, a 29% decrease. We saw a decrease overall with them. Now we get to that senior number. We saw that 7% or that 6% increase. On the street, though, that 300 number represents a 29% decrease of seniors experiencing unsheltered homelessness. So, you know, if you've had to rank some, you know, our world, sadly, you naturally put, if you have to choose between being unsheltered homelessness or your population receiving shelter, obviously, if one number is going to go down, you prefer it to be the unsheltered number. You know, that's for us, that's a sort of a silver lining in a dark cloud when it comes to the senior number. We're excited that less seniors are on the street. Now, as we go to the sheltered number. Now, the sheltered number is sort of an interesting one. We've spent as a system, both here at the county and at cities and in the private sector, a lot of energy over the last 3 and 5 years to add capacity to our shelters, add beds, and we've done a really good job of that. So we were actually thinking we'd see an increase in this number because there was a greater capacity, and we're filling that capacity in our eyes, or that's what the goal is. And actually this 2661 number was a decrease. It was an 8.2% decrease in the number of people experiencing homelessness in our shelters. What we quickly realized was, oh yeah, when we did the unsheltered count, all of the shelters were at reduced capacity due to COVID. So it's not a surprise that this number is actually lower because a lot of them were at like 50, 60% capacity. What that also tells us is we're going to be really interested in the number in the next time we do this count. And if the number goes up, we will have to look at it really critically because it might be just because we have more capacity, or maybe there's more to it. The subpopulation numbers are really interesting here too. I told you the vets and the transition age youth, they went down overall, and they went down on the streets as well. Here, all three numbers went up. The 135 vets, that represents 6% increase of since 2019. The 126 transition age youth is an 8% increase in that number from 2019. And then the big one here is seniors. That 418 number, that represents a 64% increase in the number of seniors in our shelter system from 2019. And then I'm going to show you one more slide that I think is really relevant to this group that I think adds to that number of 64% increase of shelters, seniors in shelters. The other trend we saw is we look at this slide pretty regularly when we do the point in time count. And this talks about disabling conditions and then some sort of, I'll call them disabling condition subpopulations for lack of better words. And what we saw here is most of these numbers went up. The unsheltered numbers, all of the percentages went up except for those living that identified as living with HIV and AIDS. So we saw a 3% increase in the of the population. So 55% of our population on the street this time identified as experiencing chronic homelessness, where the last time only 52% of our population did. We saw a 7.5% increase in the number of people, in the percentage of people on the street that identified as having a substance use issue. As you see here, the 41.45%, where that was somewhere in the 33% range last time. A 1% increase of physical disability, 2.5% mental health, 0.25% disabling condition, and 0.25% for domestic violence. And what that really tells us is that our population, when I say our population, meaning the population of people experiencing homelessness, it's getting older, and they're also experiencing, they're they're getting older, their length of homelessness is getting longer, and the additional challenges and presenting problems that they have in their lives besides homelessness are increasing as well. So, you know, the point in time count, if you don't mind, I'm going to stop sharing. The point in time count is a valuable exercise, and it tells us a lot of information. With that being said, it is not the only place we get data, and it is one data mark, and rightfully so, because it's a nice clean number that the public really likes to hold on to. But it's exactly what it's described. It's a point in time, one specific point in time count of our population. So we value this data. With that being said, this isn't our only data, and this isn't, you know, we're encouraged by the numbers, but this data shows we got plenty of more work to do. And these numbers, especially those last couple of slides, you know, that point about our folks getting older, our folks being homeless longer, and them having a lot, presenting with more conditions, that tells us where we got to go with our system. I think it also speaks to, you know, like in any industry, we're doing a good job with the low hanging fruit. And I think we're doing a good job with some of our most challenging, for lack of a better word, cases. But clearly, we've got to really focus and adapt our approach to continue to remember what we saw in this data. And then as our office does, we continue to compare this data with some of our other annual reporting over time. So with that, I'll be quiet and I'll take any questions.
Okay, who has the first question? I know there's going to be many.
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead, Mary.
First, thank you and nice to meet you. I am very familiar with point in time count. I was the deployment center, the agency I worked for, I should say, was the deployment center for 3 years. And my first year volunteering was 2011. So I've watched the changes in the industry or in the community. I'm interested to know, and it's not an answer that has to be answered now, but I'm interested in to know what other data points that you're mentioning or that you didn't mention would help us in the work that we're doing for seniors. I know that during the pandemic, lots of, you know, Project Tool Belt, Project Room Key, different programs started that helped people who were on the streets get into hotels, so scattered site shelters. And I know Mission Hospital launched a program with FAM down in the South Spa, where people leaving the hospital are now going through the same thing through hotels. So that's keeping people off the streets and then working on that housing solution with them. So I'm just wondering if there's something you could provide us at some point that would help us with the other data that we need. And Sandy and the rest of the team, you know, forgive me if you already have this information. This is my first meeting with this committee. I'm excited to be here and just looking for the rest of the information.
Yeah, so we have a lot of the data we track annually and throughout the year that is sort of on top of the point in time count, that other data I referenced, comes through our homeless management information system, our database. So many of our providers are entering into the same database. And what that does is that system really helps us track utilization over the year. And there's two specific reports that we have presented on at our Continuum of Care Board that are public reports that I can help provide. One's a system improvement. There's the LSA, longitudinal study analysis, and the other one is the system performance measure report. They're reports that go a little bit into deeper detail about utilization and where our system is every day instead of a point in time. So that's helpful. And then, you know, in terms of services, you nailed it. One of the silver linings, as we all know from COVID, is that a lot of us received additional funding to really address the groups that we were working with pre-pandemic. And we've been concerned, and I'm sure a lot of groups have been concerned about a potential funding cliff that was approaching or might approach after the pandemic. And I think so far we're really excited that the state and the federal government has continued to provide significant funding to ensure that there isn't that service funding cliff that some of us have feared. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions? Denise Barnes.
Thank you for your presentation, Doug. Really appreciate all the many, many hours coordinating and getting this information. I'm a past city council member for Anaheim, and I see how staggering the numbers are. But can you tell me, a lot of times those advocates come to the council, but their regard is in those who have already passed. Do you have that little segment in tally? I know it's not presented in the summary, but how tragic is it?
Yeah, so the sheriff's department, who also oversees the coroner's department, has an annual report. And that's often what the advocates, rightfully so, are sounding the alarm on, because we have seen a significant increase over the last several years in the amount of homeless individuals that are dying. Sheriff Barnes has convened a review committee that is multidisciplinary and also not just within the county, but has many different community stakeholders from cities and from the private sector to look at that data to see how we could better shape our system. What we're seeing is, first of all, actually the number of COVID deaths amongst individuals experiencing homelessness, believe it or not, have been incredibly low. They're in the low double digits, and we're proud of that. What we're seeing is that the significant increase for that number is around overdose deaths, predominantly opioid and fentanyl overdose deaths. And how do we ensure that the many programs and services that are available here in the county, how are we making sure that we're reaching those people? And that's a challenge. And so I guess, long story short, we are looking at those numbers, and we do have this review committee. I think we're not at the start line, but we're also not at the finish line in regards to that exercise. I think we're probably a little close. We've just started to embark on a deep analysis of that. So the one thing I'll add, the true homeless advocate in me knows that the only way to truly prevent deaths of homeless individuals is to get them housed. If you're not homeless, if you're not homeless, then you can't pass away being homeless. So housing is always critical. But I caution that with, there is no silver bullet to addressing homelessness or addressing homeless deaths as well. So although I, sort of make that remark, and housing is so incredibly important, and that's the finish line. Services, that are client-centered and that are client-specific to the needs that they need are incredibly important as well. So I don't want anyone walking away thinking that we just build more housing and eventually everyone will be in housing and you don't have to worry about that number. That's not the approach.
Would you say that most deaths in the senior population was due to one specific cause than another that maybe we as a group can address and bring to the state's attention?
That's a great question. And that's something I haven't looked at, breaking down the deaths by seniors. But that is something I could bring to the commission and look at the data that way. And I could see if there's anything that I could provide back to that. That's very interesting. I'm writing that down.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Denise. You always have good comments. Anyone else have questions? I have one, Doug. I was reading the Orange County section of the LA Times, and the article was kind of negative on the house. They thought that it was inaccurate. And I was wondering if that's because you changed the system. Would that make a difference, do you think?
I saw that article, and I think the point in time count in any census, I always lead with this: no methodology is perfect, and we understand that our number, I give you the 5,718 number. I understand that every methodology is flawed, and we've really looked at it closely. Some of the things I believe, if I remember right, that they pointed out in the article, to be honest with you, I didn't necessarily agree upon. They referenced the Cal Optima number that was used a few years ago. And that Cal Optima number, a couple of things about that. That number was a number for how many people they served over the year that identified as homeless, so not one point in time. And then it also, they collected that information in a very unique way at Cal Optima that they're trying to improve. It's challenging for those apples to apples to have a true apples to apples comparison. Our methodology, I think it has, I know it has improved. I will always favor a system that goes out and actually counts the entire area and has these unique identifiers compared to an extrapolation time, and then an extrapolation model. And the other pieces is making sure, I think that's sometimes where the media and the advocate get confused, is that, that Cal Optima number is a terrific example. That's talking about the amount of people they see throughout the entire year. And our report just measures the amount of people at one slice of time. And with that being said, we have a committee, our COC has a committee that looks at our methodology, and we're always looking at ways to tweak it, to improve it. The challenge is, if you change something too much, then you can't compare it to the previous. We have to compare it to that. But that's also not an excuse. We just got to stick with what we have. So it's that balance. And it's really an all-year activity, the point in time count, and looking at the methodology and debriefing how the previous year went. How can we improve? One of the ways we're looking at improving is how do we capture families a little better, specifically sheltered families, because sometimes they're a little more hidden, and our family providers are very interested in figuring out how to make that a more comprehensive number. So yeah, stuff like that.
Carol Moore has her hand, and I just want to remind everybody, let's mute ourselves in case we have a question, because we're getting feedback. Can you hear me, Carol? And then Carol Moore has a question.
Thank you for the presentation. Helped with the last couple of years, and kind of if
are you on your phone, Carol?
Pardon?
Are you on your phone?
No.
Okay, hard to hear you. Juno, can you mute yourself, please? Juno? Thank you. Carol, try again.
Okay, thanks.
There you go.
I have helped with the count. Thank you for your presentation. It's very thorough, and I appreciate all the work that goes into it. I've helped with the count the last couple of years, and I kind of wondered if the people living in their cars, I thought we did it differently this year. And I felt like I wasn't sure that we really caught all those people. Mm-hmm. And I have another comment, and that had to do with relating to that. I happened to be leaving the community where I live, and I looked over and saw somebody. It's a long story, I won't even go through it, but it turned out to be a person who was living in their car, and he was having car trouble. And I gave him a ride. A couple things got involved in it. But I realized because I read something else after that, that confiscating and impounding cars is an issue, because that once those cars are gone, that really is a level of support that they had at least had some place to stay and this mobile unit. Once that's gone, it's a downward, certainly a downward spiral from there. Is there any correlation, or do you have any, data regarding that, of confiscation, impounding cars? Thank you for your work.
No, Carol, thank you. I think you hit the nail on the head with one of the areas that we continue to look at. We know that, in terms of counting folks in cars, that's always incredibly challenging. How do we get that number right? How do we do it right? So I appreciate that you're dead on. In terms of the impounding of cars, I don't have the data, but one of the things that I could say is that this is why the work that our outreach teams do, whether it's here at the county or at the city, are so important, that they have a strong relationship with the local law enforcement. And all of them really do. Our local law enforcement, what I've seen here, are really great, whether it's the sheriff's department or the cities, because one of the things is exactly a car could be impounded. And I think our law enforcement does a good job reaching out to us to make sure that if they believe that the vehicle is, if it's empty, but they believe it's where someone's living, that often they won't impound the car until we figure it out, until we see if someone's living in there, if we could get them services and we could get them help. I don't have any information. And the one thing I guess I can say, because sometimes I'm sort of barricaded in this office a little far away from the street. I haven't heard in the almost 2 years that I've been here, I haven't heard any complaints about cars, anyone having their car impounded. And one of the things that makes Orange County a little unique from my experience back in New York is that the advocate community is incredibly strong here. And we do have some litigation that has helped protect appropriately folks experiencing homelessness. So often working with Judge Carter at the U.S. District Court and the Elder Law Center, who represents through a settlement agreement with the county, represents folks experiencing homelessness, they'll reach out to us immediately to say, hey, listen, this is going on, and we need to make sure that we're addressing it appropriately. And believe it or not, cars, knock on wood, I know now that I say this, I'll get 3 or 4 calls in the next week about on some unfortunate situation about cars. But knock on wood, I haven't received any of those calls. So that makes me believe that, for the most part, folks living in cars aren't affected by that specific situation.
You have a question, Juno?
Yes.
Go ahead.
If you have any informations or findings relating to the Asian communities, Koreans, Chinese, Vietnamese, have you done any?
So, I do. I have a little bit of information, and I'll share that with you right now. I don't have it in my slide deck right here, but I have it here on my slide deck here. So, overall, this is where it's also interesting as well, that we saw some trends, especially for those of us that are interested and get a little deeper into equity and race equity. There were some interesting numbers that we had around race and ethnicity. So specifically for those that identified as their race as Asian, unsheltered, we had 3.14%. So 96 people that represent that were unsheltered. I believe what I have here, I'm looking at my numbers here. I don't have it in front of me, but I know that that's an overrepresentation of people who identify as Asian in the general public. I know the, for example, the Black or African American category, our number was like it was 6.22%. And I think that number in the general population is somewhere around 2 to 4%. American Indian or Alaska Native on the street, we saw the number at 3.86%. And that number is, I believe, less than 1%. So, you know, the thing that I sometimes get frustrated is people say, well, you know, it's only 3% of your population. But yeah, when you compare it to the general population, it's a significant overrepresentation. It's the definition of inequality, you know, and something we need to address. So that was some of the interesting data, and I appreciate your asking that question. I'm sorry I don't have the exact data marks on here, you know, for this presentation. But yeah, we saw multiples of you know, some groups, race groups, the way we categorize them, compared to the general population.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Other questions? Fabulous presentation, Doug. So going forward, since we're focusing on seniors, what recommendations do you have for us, or what could we do as a committee or individuals to help our senior homeless population?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think part of me thinks that, you know, and I don't know if I have a suggestion for you. What I'll say is the way that I look at it is that besides the obvious, we need to continue to build housing, specifically housing. And we've done a pretty good job, but we need to continue to keep our eye on housing that's specific for seniors. The frustration that I have is frustration is probably a strong word, is that our system needs to capture and help people before they are experiencing homelessness as seniors. And the reason I say that is because that our senior number grew, but also the length of homelessness grew as well, meaning that folks, you know, are not necessarily experiencing homelessness right off the bat as a senior, but they're aging into homelessness as well. And we need to really try to address it further upstream as well. But I think the only other, and I feel like it's a really, you know, sort of unsophisticated answer, so I apologize for that, is that any advocacy for additional senior housing, whether it's specifically permanent supportive housing, I think is really valuable. So I'm sorry I don't have anything, you know, more to give on that.
No, that's very good. Appreciate it. Excellent presentation. Oh, Helen has her hand up.
Yes, just a final comment on that. And of course, I completely agree about the need for advocacy for affordable housing solutions for our seniors plus supportive housing. And this committee, you may not be aware, Doug, that we've had a number of presentations about new communities being developed to address the needs of our seniors. I just wanted many of this particular subcommittee have been active in the point in time, as you've heard, participating over the years in the count. But is there one opportunity to collect relevant data to really help us address the needs of seniors? Because I think we're not all aware, but the Homeless Management Information System only captures those agencies who participate in federal funding. So we have a disconnect in terms of data. And I'm active in Newport Beach's homeless advocacy. And I love the fact that our law enforcement were out there helping with the point in time. But I think we continue to have a disconnect with the right data sources. So what would that look like? What is the right data source?
You know, you hit the nail on the head. And as I, you know, as I presented on HMIS during this, you know, it always clicks up in my head because it's only as valuable, like any data set, mm-hmm. as the data that is coming into it, who feeds into it. The COC has done has spent a tremendous amount of energy in expanding the groups that enter into HMIS so that we do cover more of the homeless services that are being provided out in the community, and obviously those that are being provided to the to seniors out in the community. And we want to continue to do that and to ensure that every service homeless service provider that's appropriate enters into HMIS. In terms of the relevant data, I don't have a good answer on that, if I'm going to be honest. You know, and one thing I'll note is that, you know, I know that our departments of aging, you know, OCCR and SSA, the staff there and the leadership there are working very closely together on a handful of initiatives. Also, the master plan for aging they're working on. And, you know, that's the group that I would lean on for that. They're the experts and they're really good too. You know, I think that they're one of, you know, some of our brightest colleagues here in the county. So that's encouraging. But yeah, I would lean on them for that answer, Helen. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before we let Doug go? Doesn't look so like Doug. Thank you. Once again, it was an excellent presentation. I really appreciate it. Very good information, and we've got some work to do with our senior population.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, feel free to reach out anytime. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's excellent, Helen. Thank you for getting that. It was very good. Good to get the information, even if some of it's not so positive. Okay, next we have our chair items. So when we do the roundtable, I'm going to ask everybody if you have any meeting suggestions, ideas, or recommendations. And our old business would be goal number one, housing for all ages and stages. And number two, affording aging. And so we'll do number nine next. And I noticed Cynthia Thacker's name is off. Did she resign? Does anybody know?
Yes, she did, I believe.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's too bad. All right. We'll start with Mary Perdue. So we're going around talking, because I know you're kind of new. Any suggestions? It was kind of hard for you because you're new, but any ideas that you might have or recommendations and or any other comments you'd like to make? You're still muted, Mary.
I was just testing to see if you could read my lips.
No, I can't.
I am delighted to be here. This is my very first meeting, so I'm not sure. Can I go last on this? Is that okay?
Sure. I shouldn't have picked on you first. That wasn't very nice. Carol Moore.
Sorry, I don't have any comments. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we have Juno. Juno, you're muted.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, the economic the situation in overseas, Korea, Japan, China, is changing so drastic, and the dollar exchange rate is changing a lot as well, so that some of the seniors who receive some support from overseas, the children are having a lot of difficulty sending money to support the seniors. That's what is happening, the drastic change in economic situation at this point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for pointing that out. Jean Hernandez.
One, let me just say that was an excellent presentation. I really enjoyed that current data and how that breaks down. It was very, very helpful. But no, other than that, I don't really have a comment on that, Sandy.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go to Jerry.
Okay. My recommendation is who gonna be do the next presentation on August? So since we don't know whose turn for the August presentation.
I don't have the presentation schedule in front of me for some reason, but I think it's me. I think it's 211, but I'll check Jerry to make sure. Somehow I didn't get it this time. I usually get it.
Okay.
I don't remember seeing it, but that's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That's it.
Okay. Amelia. Was she here today? I don't think she was. Helen.
The only, as you can see today, I did arrange the presentation and happy to find other people if we need them. I was at an event yesterday with UCI Artificial Intelligence Group working on data analytics as it affects mental health. And I was handed a community health survey form that if I send the link, I think it might be really important for our senior voice to be heard in this conversation. Perhaps I can provide the link. Advance OC is doing an equity analysis of different populations and their healthcare access. And obviously housing is healthcare as well. So I think it relates to our comments. And if I can provide the link to the survey, apparently it's a 10-minute survey and they're gathering a lot of data. So I can give you a phone number if you want. It's I could put it in the chat. And the email is info@advanceoc.com. And I think it would be really important for all of us to participate in giving our perspectives on senior healthcare issues and housing and transportation issues. So an opportunity.
Do you have a flyer on that, Helen?
I just have a little half page, which I will, maybe if I just send it to Desiree, she could share it.
If you send it to Desiree, she'll send it out to all of us.
But they're doing really interesting reports. And to Juno's question, they've already done one on Asian Pacific Islanders and equity issues relating to healthcare. I think you'd find that report really interesting, Juno and Jerry and others interested in other subpopulations. And they're doing, the next one will be on Latinx populations. There will be an upcoming one on Black community members. And as you heard from Doug, there's different data on the impacts on different segments of our population, which we may not be aware of unless we have our voice heard. Thanks.
Thank you. Good point. Denise Barnes.
I don't know if you all get the AARP bulletin.
Just barely hear you, Denise.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if all of you get the AARP magazine that comes out monthly, but for June, it says the truth about aging. Older Americans are redefining health, wealth, and the goals of a long life. And under that, they cover just about every aspect of affording to be able to live in the quality of life that you're used to. And it seems like just with the numbers coming out today about inflation, groceries, gas, it's startling to know that 9% is the percentage of inflation as of last month. You're finding more and more people at the Meals on Wheels desperate for the frozen meals of food. more churches are engaging in food distribution and having higher percentages than 200 or 300 cars in a two-hour period. This is something I think, if we could just take one of these goals, affording aging, and talk about it, whether it's about hearing aids, or phones, or free health fairs, medical care, and put and see if we can't even see about putting this information out monthly to our communities. Because I just went to an awesome health fair that was put out, started actually by the UCI nurses. They came to a church here in Anaheim and had a health fair in all regards, dental, medical, I mean, you name it, and it was free. And they had doctors and nurses on site. Now, I have never seen that ever. Wow. I went over and indulged myself. You could ask any questions. Now, they weren't writing prescriptions, but they definitely were there to take your blood pressure. I mean, like everything. They were so excited to see anybody who would sit down and engage in a conversation. And, you know, most people don't want to talk to their family or their kids about their problems. But these were eager interns to help anybody who wanted to come. And I'm going to encourage that in our community. But I can give the number and the resources there, because if you can have a free health fair anywhere in your city, that's gold. People want to go anonymously, or they would probably sign up for an appointment. And I think it's a good resource. So even if we could take time off of housing and transportation and maybe move to just one meeting like that, Sandy, I think it would still give us food for thought.
So you're saying, I missed the last part because I can barely hear you. You're saying one of our meetings, we should what?
That we could just have like a feeding of all of our ideas and see if we can't maybe get something outside the box on housing and transportation, but also for how to age in place,
okay, the
quality of life.
Good point. Maybe you and I can talk after the meeting and get some more specifics and figure out how we could accomplish this. That's a very good idea. And I was going to say, to your point, they said on the news last night, every citizen, I guess, in the U.S. is spending $500 more per month for the same, whatever, groceries, gas, whatever. They threw it all. $500 a month is a lot of money to everybody, but especially people that are struggling or seniors on a fixed income. Okay. Linda Barcelona.
Hi. Okay, well, Denise and I actually met about a month ago and we're brainstorming a bunch of these ideas and topics for a speaker for our housing and transportation. We have a lot of questions and we're trying to figure out where to get these answers from. But I wanted to confirm with you, Sandy, which meeting the two of us were supposed to be getting our presenter for. Is it August or September? Seems to me it was September maybe, or even October.
You know, like I said, somehow this month I usually get the, I missed it. I'm having computer problems and I didn't see, she usually sends us the speaker presentation schedule. So everything I'm doing now is off the top of my head, which isn't very good.
Okay. I thought I had a copy too, but I couldn't find it.
After the meeting's over, I'll go double check and I'll email you because I really, truly don't remember. I was thinking I was August for 2-1.
Okay.
And I was thinking you were September, but I couldn't.
We're September. I kind of recall that too in the back of my head. I thought we had a little more time, but okay. Yeah. Thank you. If you could confirm that, I really will. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I will. And I appreciate you bringing that up.
Okay.
Once the computers go, I have
I know.
They're great when they work, but when they don't work, oh my gosh.
That's right.
Yep. Okay, thank you very much. Charlene.
Just a comment, since our city, Costa Mesa, is at our last council meeting on Tuesday night, it was a study session on the housing element. And what we heard over and over in the 2-hour meeting just on housing was how critical it is for senior housing, especially with, as we're seeing, the numbers of seniors in the population rising in our community and the lack of affordability there. And we're facing an initiative, Measure Y, which was put into place a couple of years ago, which is impacting future developments. And so, and that measure, that initiative requires a voter approval on certain developments. So the information that Doug gave us today, and with Helen's always diligent prompting, it's forced me to take a better look at this to make sure that at our next meeting that we're having in our city council in August, that we need to rally the troops and make sure that our voices are heard, because the future is now. The future for our seniors is not just the 60 population, but in the next 10 years, we're going to see a substantial growth. So I just want to thank you, Helen, for bringing that speaker, because that lit another fire into me to make sure that I pay attention and get involved in our.
Okay, thank you, Charlene. Oh, Gene has his hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Charlene, you're spot on. We're going through the same thing. We call it Measure B in our city, and we're getting a lot of resistance to it. We need affordable housing. But the problem is, we were very good in identifying where they would go. We got the owner's approval. But now the residents next door don't want that housing in. So what they don't realize is, and it goes to a vote of the people, and if they vote it down, the state has the ability to come in and force it anyway. So people need to be educated that by you voting no doesn't mean it's not going to happen. So I'd rather we responsibly figure out where to go rather than the state come in and just do it. It's a huge issue. Thank you.
And you have much more say and control when you vote for it, and you can have what you want rather than the state coming and saying it's going to look like this.
There's a lot of pushback from people who don't want high density housing near them. That's the bottom line.
Right. But with seniors, you're not bringing like the cars and everything you are with the younger population for housing.
You would think not. That was our last building, our high density, was a senior development. It's very, very nice.
Like that one that Elizabeth had the presentation, and it was a beautiful complex, and it was in going in that church building, and not in the church, but the church lot, and the, right. And the community voted it down. They could get anything in there now, and they'd have way less transportation problems or cars and parking and all that.
Exactly.
For my part, we had our Lake Forest Senior Advisory Board meeting yesterday, and we recapped several things. One of them was Lake Forest has a pretty active 4th of July parade, and I don't know of any other city that also has a senior float representing the seniors. And what we do is, as we're walking along with the float, those of us that can walk, we're passing on information to people that we think would like to come to our center that have never been there before. And we had a lot of people commenting, because I guess people don't read or don't pay attention. The other thing that came up was during COVID, a lot of the money wasn't spent on certain kinds of transportation. So the AgeWell bus dropped their fee. It was only 50 cents, but anyway, it's now at zero. And that's temporary, it's not for forever. And then our taxi program, this, I'm just talking about Lake Forest. I don't know if everybody's different or not, but our taxi program in Lake Forest, the price went back to what it was a while ago. And it's only like, I think it's $2.50 anywhere you want to go in Lake Forest, and $7 if you want to go to the hospitals and so forth, which, as you all know, we can't even turn on your car for that. So it's a good program for seniors. and the taxi program, they had a meeting with majority of the cities and then OCTA, because they have a big part in the taxi program. And they were surprised to find out that Laguna Woods is still using vouchers for their taxi program, and they're having all kinds of problems with it because people pass the vouchers to other people that are not qualified to use it. And then there's administrative fees with the vouchers. And they said they're spending $3,500 just to analyze and go through the vouchers and whatever they have to do with the vouchers. Ours is everybody goes in and gets an ID, and then you just call the taxi company, and then the city doesn't have to verify anything because it goes right to the taxi company. So I just wanted to bring that up. And then circling back, not picking on new people, but Mary, did you have anything you want to add now?
And as somebody had asked before you jumped on, if I would just give a little bit of my background.
Oh, sure.
And so I just wanted to say, first, I'm delighted to be here with this group. I'm honored, really. I've had seniors on my heart for a long time. And I've worked in nonprofit for the last 24 years, the last 12 being focused on hunger and homeless prevention for all populations. But I was able to launch a program for seniors specifically, just to provide more dignity as we watched how seniors coming through the line, you know, the food line, didn't want to, you know, ask for incontinence products, et cetera. So we started a special senior day for them. And just watching over the years how more and more seniors were showing up at our agency, and it was very difficult for them to come. It's a proud generation. Getting services sometimes has a negative feeling for them because they grew up hearing some negative things or in whatever circles. So we, you know, thought everybody was very brave to show up and ask for help, but realized early on that we needed to do some outreach to senior populations and senior centers to help take away that stigma. And, you know, just right now, you know, I'm no longer in a nonprofit. I'm now consulting for nonprofits. But I'm watching how a friend of mine is in an apartment complex. It's a large one, and rent just went up $300. A lot of seniors are in there. It's not a senior complex in particular, but $300 a month is huge and cost prohibitive for so many people. And, you know, we had heard that over the next 2 years, rent was going to go up $400. So the work this committee does, super important. I'm not sure yet how we get the information out there. I love the conversation going on here. We're talking about looking at all the different areas for seniors and what would help them with their quality of life. And prevention was a huge part of what I did over the last 12 years, trying to capture people before they landed on the streets, so that, you know, you could help with a budget, you could help with, you know, asking those difficult questions. We knew that people showing up for help were under so much stress that they were typically dealing about 12 points lower than their own IQ because of stress. So they weren't firing on all cylinders, they weren't making decisions based on logic all the time, because it's so emotional and difficult to be faced with knowing that you're looking at becoming homeless, let alone those who walked in who were living in their cars. So I have a very big heart for this work. And again, I don't know, you know, when we look at all the different areas, quality of life for seniors and how do we help them prevent landing on the streets, how do we get the accurate data that we need, but also how do we then disseminate the information out to the public? I hear, you know, Jean and Charlene, who, by the way, Charlene, good to see you. Charlene and I did the Fieldstone, 10 years ago, Fieldstone program. So fun to be on a committee with you. But it's listening to the different advocates and working in their cities. How do we educate the public with what information we know and get it out there? Because if they're not approving affordable senior housing in some places, okay, the government can come in and say, no, we're doing this. But also all those seniors then will be becoming homeless in their cities. So it's logical to me. And yet I realize it's emotional for a lot of people.
Thank you, Mary. And then Mary, you probably have ideas. So we're always looking for speakers. So be sure and let us know if you have an idea and or if you're someone you would like to recommend to speak. We're always looking for, you know, any information, any new topics, things that we've missed. So thank you for joining. And
sure. And is there a list, maybe an annual list that is for the last year or so that I could see who has
spoken? Check with Desiree. Do you have Desiree's contact information?
spoken to the group, so I can, yeah, who has been a presenter? I do.
Okay, because you're cutting up now.
Thank you.
Right here. But if you check with Desiree, I think she could give you, she could at least give you a copy of the planned presentations we had for this year. And I don't know if she has last year or not. I don't know that how far they keep that information. But normally we try to put on the agenda who's going to talk or who's going to provide the presenter for the next month. Okay.
I do have the one for this year. I will ask her for the one for last year.
So okay.
I
can, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Do we have any public for comments?
We did not receive any requests to speak in advance, and there are no members of the public present. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Any other information or topics that we need to bring up before we adjourn? Okay, so our next meeting will be August 11th at 9:30, and hopefully my computer will be working and we'll be all set to go. And then Desiree, when you get a chance, could you send us the speaker presentation, because we have some confusion on what we're doing.
Yes, of course. I'll send that over.
Okay, great. And I think everybody needs that. All right. So we'll thank you all very much for everything you do for the seniors. Thank you, Helen. Excellent presentation. And like I said, if you have any ideas for topics or speakers, please let us know. We're always looking. We want to keep on the loop for the seniors. And no other comments. We'll adjourn the meeting and we'll see you next month, August 11th. And thank you all for everything you do. Oh, wait a minute. Charlene has her hand up. Charlene, you're muted.
I was just waving goodbye.
Oh, okay. I'm kind of slow. I thought, oh no, she's got to say something. Okay, thank you all very much. Have a good rest of the month.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.